Karen Lyle of Sailsport Talk. Congratulations to the National Sailing Hall of Fame inductees of 2023. The ceremony was held at the Balboa Bay Club and Newport Yacht Harbor Club. Inductees include Sally Honey from the San Francisco Bay Area, Tim Hogan from Newport Beach, Bob Perry from Seattle, Washington, and Bill Lapworth of Los Angeles. Tim Hogan, a three-time All-American sailor, has been president of the Interscholastic Sailing Association, ISSA, since 2005. His board doubled the number of high school teams competing in sailing from 330 to 620 competitive teams. Sally Honey has twice been named Rolex Yachtswoman of the Year in 1973 and 74, and most recently shared an inspiring victory, winning the 2022 Newport Bermuda race with her husband Stan Honey aboard their 56-year-old Cal 40 Illusion. She is the author of U.S. Sailing's Safety at Sea, a guide to safety under sail and personal survival, and is chair of World Sailing's Offshore Special Regulations Committee. William Bill Lapworth partnered with Jack Jensen to build Cal 20s and later one of the most popular yachts ever, the Cal 40. Lapworth was one of the first naval architects to successfully embrace the boat building's industry change from wood to fiberglass. Lapworth and Jensen collaborated on 32 different designs with Cal Yachts. Lapworth cruised for many years on his own Cal Cruising 46 with his wife Peggy and their five children. Renowned West Coast naval architect Robert Bob Perry grew up in Australia and then moved to Seattle with his family when he was 12. He started with the Valiant 40 and then designed for many builders, including Tiana, Choi Lee, Valiant, Baba, Taxing, Hans Christian Yachts, Islander, Passport, Pacific Seacraft, and Saga. Other inductees include John Cullis from Houston, Texas, John Marshall from Florida, Skip Etchells, and Richard Dick Stearns III from Illinois. And finally, Caribbean sailor Peter Holmberg, who won Olympic medals in the Finn class, four Congressional Cups in Long Beach, and America's Cup campaigns. Congrats again to all. This is Karen Lyle of Sailsport Talk. Building Bridges welcomes Art on Piano 1 Steinway & Sons 338662, restored by Piano Finders in 2018, to the Art on Piano Art Project. That's the Chopin Ballade in A-flat, recorded by Kendall Rossbein at Fantasy Studios in Berkeley, California. Learn more at artonpiano.com. artonpiano.com.
All right, thank you for that, Chris Cross. Welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you, coast to coast and around the world on American Forces Radio Network. And that music means it's 9:40 Pacific time on a Tuesday. And we bring in Karen Lyle from SailsportTalk.com, as we have for many years, to co-host this segment with me. And Karen, you're going to switch it up. You don't need a boat today. You want to talk about swimming, right?
Well, swimming and boats, because swimming leads to boats, didn't you know?
It's the gateway drug to boats, yes.
It is indeed. Do you swim, by the way?
No.
You don't swim? Ever, ever, never, ever?
Well, in a swimming pool, but I'm not going to go out in a body of water like some kind of crazy schmuck.
Well, you know, swimming in a swimming pool is no small thing.
Well, that's fun.
I mean, when I was 14 years old, I couldn't even swim in a swimming pool. I had to stay at the place where I could stand.
I know. Then you became a champion.
Well, I think I was second place in long distance in the state championships, but it was a little pathway between no swimming to there.
Tell us more.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about swimming, I wasn't thinking about that so much until we had our guest last week, the nonprofit that raises money for people to learn how to swim, Oceans and Roads Foundation, Inga Grimmett. And I was thinking, you know, I swim now without thinking about it. I'm on a boat. I don't worry about, you know, falling over into the water. I don't, it hasn't happened unless I was on a small boat, and that was our purpose, you know, where we capsize on purpose so we can right the boat. But basically, you know, I've snorkeled in Zanzibar and free dived there and in the British Virgin Islands and all these places, and I just don't think about it that much because I got my introduction at the YMCA when I was 15. I think it was Southern California.
Tell us more.
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about where things go from swimming, because there's a lot of different water sports around the world. And boats, you know, we've been covering Sail Sport Talk here on Sports Byline for 242 shows now. And we've added quite an audience to our listeners, because you have all the sports fans. And then we've added people who are boaters, who are sailors, you know, who kayak, who canoe, who do all kinds of water sports, you know, in power boats and so forth. And I think, you know, I was looking at this up and there was something like 11,834,500 boats registered in the United States. Did you know that?
That's crazy, yeah.
Yeah, in all 50 states. And so a lot of those boats are under 24 feet. They're small, so oftentimes trailered. You were saying that you've been up in Lake Tahoe many years. Have you been on small boats?
Well, we have a family cabin up there because I'm filthy rich. Now, my grandfather built it in 1966 in Kings Beach. It had no phone and no TV. And then in the 70s, we got a phone, and now it has a TV. And neighbors used to be more isolated. So I've never known anybody with a boat, so I would rent every once in a while. My favorite thing to rent is the Sea-Doo, the water motorcycle, but that's $75 an hour, so I think I've only done that like three times. One time way out in the middle of the lake, my boat did capsize. I went in the drink for about, you know, a few seconds, which was kind of scary. And then I was helped back in, but I don't have a lot of boating experience on Lake Tahoe.
Well, being there, you're watching a lot of boats, right?
Oh, it's beautiful, yeah. And they're like, especially if you come down the west side by, you know, Carnelian Bay and Agate Bay, and you see them kind of moored out in the private little docks. It's very, it's very bucolic.
Well, you know, it seems to me such an interesting intersection between boating and sail sport and the Sports Byline audience. And you've been broadcasting now since, when did you start? Tell us a little bit about your background before Sail Sport Talk came onto the show.
Well, I started working in television in the late 80s when I got out of St. Mary's, and I worked in sports television as a tape operator and Chiron generator. Then it became, when I was 26, a technical director. And so I worked Ace, Giants, Warriors. I was there before the Sharks even existed, Cal, Stanford, all that stuff. And then went into radio right around 2000. So I've been in radio the last 23 years. This show has been on the air more than 20 years now with me as the host.
Well, and now, as I understand it, we have 100 million listeners in 168 countries, and that's on 10 platforms, I think. iHeartRadio, and it's just iHeartRadio alone has people who have devices in their cars that have the iHeartRadio app, or on their smart TVs or on their mobile devices or computers, are able to listen to the Sports Byline channel. And then in other countries, I think iHeart's only United States, Canada, and Australia, but in other countries we have TuneIn Radio, which is really big, and you've got Sports Byline channels with 24/7 sports on that. And what other platforms? And
there's also Stitcher is another one. I'm also on Twitch.tv right now in the studio. There are a bunch of different ways. SportsByline.com as we stream. The potential is 100 million. I don't think we're getting 100 million right now, but the potential.
Right. I think we estimated something like 20 million actual listeners each show, right?
Well, there's at least one. His name's Dominic. He's listening. I can guarantee you. I can guarantee you one listener.
Well, you know, we have to give a shout out to Dominic, who really makes this go with the studio engineering that brings in people from all over.
And I only think he's half listening, so it's half a person.
No, he's giving you the thumbs up there. I can see it.
No, I'm just teasing him. So I know you always also wanted to talk about the fact you mentioned all the boats that are registered. I do love boats, and I remember the first car I bought, I almost bought a boat instead because I like going out on San Pablo Bay in the muddy waters and fishing for sturgeon and all that, which I think is super fun. But the thing I do now with the party boats is they're called the pontoon boats on the San Pablo Dam. Mm-hmm. The San Pablo Dam, you can rent those for like, I think it's like $90 an hour, but you can get like 10 people on it. It's a flat bottom. It drives like a car. It's really fun.
Oh, yeah, I've been on the pontoon boats, actually up in the Delta, because my dad's been a boater, a power boater, since before I was born, and he joined the Delta Yacht Club in 1973, and there's an island up there above Stockton that he takes his boat. He started out with a Chris Craft. Not a Chris Craft.
Yeah,
right?
Chris Craft. Yeah, no, Chris Crafts are very, very... In fact, you know what's funny is that Seinfeld, when he got rich, he bought himself like 3 Chris Crafts.
Well, I remember one day we were up in the marina and he was starting up the motor and there was this like thud, you know, and all of a sudden this, you know, I don't know, it was a very long bass. And if I were a fisherman, I'd be able to tell you exactly how long, but it was bigger than I was, and I was probably 8 or 9 years old at the time, and it came floating up to the surface, and the prop had killed it, and some of the fishermen that were by the way said, oh my gosh, we've been trying to get that guy for years, that's an old timer, and he's, oh, I can't believe you got him with your prop. Anyway, we actually, you know, borrowed some of the fishermen's tools and scaled them and took them home and eat them for weeks.
Nice.
But that's my fishing story. We fished on the trip down to when I went from San Francisco to Puerto Vallarta on a 78-foot catamaran. That was right before the pandemic. We did have several fishermen aboard, and we did, you know, we cast a line off the back, and we had fresh mahi-mahi in. Oh, that was just marvelous because we had a chef who knew how to fix that. And, you know, so I haven't been the one fishing, but I've definitely had fishermen on board different boats that I've been on.
All right. So tell me how you go from not being able to swim to free diving in Zanzibar.
Well, I mean, the YMCA program that I was involved in was a swim team training program. So I learned the 4 different strokes and, you know, they just taught us. The coach was a very good teacher. So I just learned, you know, starting with, you know, kickboards, how to kick, and then you'd have these little floats you put between your legs so you can learn the different strokes, and then you'd stand on the side and learn how to do the strokes in the air, you know, just standing up like the, you know, how you breathe and moving the head. So everything was kind of sectioned off into little sections. And then I just spent, I learned how to swim when I was 15, but then in high school, I joined the swim team, and then I would swim 2 hours in the morning and 2 hours before school and 2 hours after school. And so just, you know, lots of training and practice. But Zanzibar was actually really fun. I went there as a guest of someone I had taken sailing in the San Francisco Bay with a bunch of wholesale tour operators from around the United States, and ended up in Zanzibar, and I just, you know, I asked one of the locals if he would introduce me to a captain who took me out on a dhow. And we went out sailing, just the two of us, and he was a dhow fisherman turned captain, and the dhow is that wooden boat that, you know, that they've been sailing for thousands of years, you know, up in the eastern part of the world, actually going from Zanzibar up to India and around and back. And so I just took my snorkel mask with me on that particular trip and dove over the bottom, and there was some really interesting starfish. So I just, you know, held my breath and went down for a little free diving, you know, not too deep. I mean, maybe 8 feet or 9 feet or something like that. But I mean, I didn't think much about it. So that's kind of I guess, well, that's the path from one to the next, I guess.
And for people who don't know, and correct me if I'm wrong, Zanzibar are these islands off the coast of Tanzania, right?
Right, right. It's actually a part of Tanzania. In 1962, I believe, Tanzania declared its independence, and Zanzibar also did. Zanzibar was mostly occupied by people from the Middle Eastern parts of the world, and it had a very different flavor, so it's about 95% Muslim. And but it's very international. It's an international port, and a lot of the movie stars from Hollywood would come there for vacations in the 1930s and actually still today. And you've got churches, you know, all different kinds. You've got Jewish synagogues, you have, you know, the Islamic churches, you have Christian, you know, Catholic, Protestant churches, and people are it's very open about religion. Mm-hmm. There's no prejudice or fighting amongst people because mm-hmm. it's just an international port, and they get along really well.
And don't forget, as we're running out of time here, Road to Zanzibar, that was Hope and Crosby. Remember that?
Right. Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, you did it. Karen Lyle, salesportstalk.com. Go there for more information. Thanks for coming on, and happy Thanksgiving.
And happy Thanksgiving to you and all the rest.